levantarse.
I don't think you understood me. I want to get some drivers to drive this car and that car down to Aintree. Drivers, you understand?
Like, yeah, a driver, brother.
Who?
A driver, brother.
Where do they live?
They live back over that way.
The incorporation of Sophia's cereal. To madmen, and to madmen what poetry is, fine lines written, dumbfounded and high, and equally always the syncretistic goings-on, because everyone is furnishing everything with the body they already have to live in, beyond even believing in living. There was this morning's bowl of puffed wheat, the bananas were the teachers, the cereals were the kids, and I, Sophia said, was the giant, and my spoon was my spoon. Max carries the one. Don't look at me, look at your own self. In the given weather, it's raining harder. The world is round and falling down, so rocks, look out. It's nice to be exact as she and he fall like rain to a little bit lower than young and watching something without participating. Where you begin or above like snow flying up, the curve uncriticized by us. The child, the dumb drips exist when the sun, beyond the stupid rectangles, is the ancient flower shines on them, comes out. So what? Crisscross? Counting 19 humans plus 8 trees equals 27 living beings, and that's all. And one is watching this something. You carry the one. I'm Rebecca Wolf, and you are here at the Living Poets Show. And also here is...
Tommy Jacoby.
We're going to be talking today about the living poet Bernadette Mayer. She doesn't know we're talking about her today, but I'm hoping she might tune in eventually. And so we're going to be reading some poems of hers, talking a little bit about the context of her writing and reading poems by her and by other friends of hers as well. So I'm going to start with a little bit of facts about Bernadette Mayer. She was born in what I construe as Far Rockaway in 1945, and that's Far Rockaway, New York. She's the author, at this point, of 23 books. Some of her best-known books are The Desires of Mothers to Please Others in Letters, Midwinter Day, a very recent book, Poetry State Forest, and most recently, The Studying Hunger Journals, which came out from Station Hill Press, which is a local press based somewhere down around Berryville, or Berrytown, excuse me. So Mayer is now, she's kind of an icon to a lot of younger writers. She's one of these people who, Tommy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but she's kind of a great example of the particular becoming universal.
Yep.
In that her writing is all about
stuff that is actually happening.
Yes, the stuff that is actually happening and happening to her.
Yeah.
And so she's always insisted on that, but not necessarily in the confessional sense of I'm going to bear the intimate details of my life. But as in those two poems of hers I just read, those are poems that include her children. Max and Sophia are names of her children. And the poems are range from, you know, the really specific, like breakfast cereal, to, you know, the more conventional poetic device of extrapolating from that little individual experience to kind of make a statement about a sort of more universal statement, like, and one is watching this something, you carry the one. So what I was trying to get at is, we're going to try to give you a sense of her milieu, right, Tommy?
Right. And I'm just going to read a little bit of a bio, I guess, on her. I mean, Rebecca gave you a pretty kind of a broad scope of where she came from and stuff, but I just want to give a little bit of particular background and time frame. So she was born in 1945, you know, in around Brooklyn, New York, and her sister is actually the painter, Rosemarie Mayer. And they, both of their parents died while they were both teenagers, I think within like 2 years of one another. And this kind of, they were both sort of driven to become artists around this time. And they both, Bernadette wound up going to the New School in Manhattan, the New School for Social Research, where she published her first book, which is called Ceremony Latin. It came out in 1964, so she would be 19.
Wow.
She got her BA 3 years later, 1967, so I guess she'd be 22. And she has continued to teach at the New School, I think probably to this day.
No, I don't think she does at all, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think she teaches actually privately out of her home, which is in East Nassau, New York. So, you know, this is the interesting thing about biographies, right? They're static. They yeah. sort of linger. It reminds me a little bit of, I introduced Bernadette at a reading in Athens, where I live, a few years ago. And it wasn't a mistake. It was an honest mistake. I made the mistake of saying that she had been married to the poet Lewis Warsh,
which is what all the websites say.
Right. And she stood up and the first thing out of her mouth was, actually, we were never married. And, you know, so I stood corrected. Anyway, I don't believe she still teaches at the New School. I used to teach there and I'm pretty sure she wasn't teaching there when I was teaching there.
Right.
So, but I know that she does lead these wonderful kind of, you know, homespun, like homeschool poetry workshops at her home, usually during the summers. And if anybody wants to find out about hiring Bernadette as a poetry teacher, you can contact me and I'll see if she's still doing that after we read more of her work to you. Okay, so do you want to continue a little bit?
Yeah, I was just going to say, so she was really prolific in the 70s and 80s. She was not married to the poet Lewis Warsh. She was close. She has two children with Lewis Warsh. She was close friends with Anne Waldman, another poet, Tom Clark, and all these poets were really closely tied to the Poetry Project at St. Mark's Church.
Alice Notley and Ted Berrigan, and
Then they were all part of. They were all like really close friends. Sent letters to each other constantly, which are like documented in all kinds of places now, and they were called, you know. Some people call them like the second wave New York School. Some people call them like the Berkshire poets. Some people call them like the St. Mark's poets. I don't know. But they all published on each other's presses, sent letters to each other, you know, published each other. And it was a very intimate sort of scene that probably, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but it probably didn't really intend to like expand past like their group of friends, you know.
Well, that's an interesting question. Like what sense did they have at the time that they were connected to the larger tradition? I kind of wanted to get at that because I think it's Tommy and I were talking earlier and he was pointing out that there's a similar scene going on now with young poets who are, you know, there's many, many small presses based on what we know as the coterie model by which poets find each other, mm-hmm. like in an intimate way. They find each other through their work, you know, in a real social organizational kind of way. And they create not a movement, not a school, not a you know, marketing niche, but they create like actual experience yeah. amongst them.
They go to each other's parties and they, you know, they buy each other gifts and
yeah, and it's about art and love.
Yeah.
So the question of like at what level, I mean, I think all of those poets though, Anne Waldman, Clark Coolidge, Alice Notley, Bernadette, and many of the others, many of them had a sense of like what was possible in terms of the tradition. And reading through a lot of these poems, I was really struck by how informed they are by literary tradition. So mm-hmm. a lot of those poets work extensively in like the sonnet format, for example. Mm-hmm. And Tommy, did you want to read one of her sonnets? Was that one of the ones you were going to read?
Yeah. Do you want to go in chronological order?
No, not necessarily. Okay, Let's just jump around.
Yeah, well, she put out a book of sonnets called Sonnets. it came out in 1989, which is the year I was born. And I want to say that the year the sonnets came out, to give you some context, some of the number one songs on the Billboard and Hot 100 were Madonna's Like a Prayer, Fine Young Cannibals, She Drives Me Crazy, We Didn't Start the Fire by Billy Joel, and Girl, I'm Gonna Miss You by Milli Vanilli, and of course, Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison.
That one just did not make it into posterity, really, for
no.
me.
Even though it's still true that every cowboy has a sad, sad song.
That is for sure.
Didn't last. All right. But this is a sonnet from her book, Sonnets. And it's called We Eat Out Together. And Sonnets came out on a press that I can't find anything about, but I know it came out on this press called Tender Buttons Books, which shows how she's at least kind of incorporating herself into a literary tradition by kind of tying herself with Gertrude Stein with the title.
Well, let me just fill in on that. Tender Buttons Press is still run actually by the poet Leanne Brown. It's a very, very small press that Leanne, she's published a number of really notable books on it. And Leanne Brown is a living poet about my age in her mid-40s who has published a number of books and who I'm actually going to, in a little bit, I'm going to play a little audio of Leanne and Bernadette reading together. So
when I'm reading this poem, I just kind of went, you could maybe listen for just how she's just describing these things that are kind of just pretty easy to visualize. You know, each individual image is pretty easy to visualize. It's easy to know what's going on. But as they kind of pile up, something weird maybe starts happening. So here's the poem. We Eat Out Together. My heart is a fancy place where giant reddish-purple cauliflowers and white ones in French and English are outside, waiting to welcome you to a boat over the low black river for a big dinner. There's a lot of choice among the foods, even a tortured lamb served in pieces and crude on a plate so hot as a rack of clouds blown over the cold, filthy river. We are entitled to see any time while we use the table covers to love each other, publicly dishing out imitative luxuries to show off poetry's extreme generosity, then home in the heart of a big limousine.
And I had picked another sonnet of hers to read. This one is a much more recent one from her book Poetry State Forest, which came out from New Directions in 2009. A sonnet that needs a wait. 6 blue jays, 4 cardinals, some chickadees, 1 pileated woodpecker, 1 lapsed Catholic in East Nassau on a Sunday. It's snowed a heap, but not as much as in Shady or even New York City. I'm wearing 4 silk shirts and 1 cotton one. They made the sun be nearer. The moon is fuller. We're getting a helium balloon for Max's birthday, but everything's either real or an illusion. What about the Sunday paper? Why is it so scary? I mean, I love it when a line of a poem, as you say it to yourself, feels like something that you would really want to say.
Yeah, totally.
I love that. And I thought I would also read a sonnet by Ted Berrigan that came out around, oh geez, do I have the year?
It's like 70-something, right?
Yeah, this would have been, no, I think in the late 60s, early 70s. I'm sorry, I don't have the date. But it's from his really famous collection of sonnets. And so Ted Berrigan, so all these, back to this scene, the Poetry Project in New York City at St. Mark's Church, which is a really thriving scene still, and which in which all these poets are publishing each other's work in these small magazines. And they were part of this thing called the Mimeo Revolution, Mimeograph. Mm-hmm. And I guess what's really interesting about it still is that axis of like community versus, it's not an antagonism, but community working alongside distribution.
And they're like, well, then they're very intimate with one another. Like, they're kind of really bound up together.
Yeah.
And so it's like in this Mimeo Revolution, it was like everyone, all these people hung out together at these bars and at these clubs and stuff. And they all had their own little they all had like their own little presses.
Yeah,
you know,
so they would hear
house.
A poem at an open mic or whatever the equivalent would have been then and say, oh my God, I love that. Can I publish that in my little journal? And so then they would publish the little journal and they would make 50 of them or something, and they would bring them to a party and give them out to their friends. And their friends would happen to be at this time, you know, I don't know, great painters. And, you know, you might have, say, Joe Brainard or yeah. Bill Berkson. Or
and then Andy Warhol was up in there, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when Andy's there, it's a party.
Yeah.
So yeah. So, but not in the sense of the term power grab sometimes comes to mind when I think of publishing now. Like, there's this sense in which we're all, or maybe it's just me, I don't know, hungry or needing to control the means of production. But that's not what this was about, really, in my mind. This was about, you know, a sharing of the means of production, basically, like new access to these machines. It's a little bit like the Industrial Revolution, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, and like to give you an example, like basically, so Bernadette's book, was Moving, came out on Angel Hair Books, which was run by the father of two of her children, Lewis Warsh and Ann Waldman, like out of, I'm not sure if Bernadette and Lewis were together yet.
Right,
but
I think Anne and Lewis were together.
Oh, really?
I believe. I don't actually know the romantic history very well, but you know, that's another part of, right,
of
the
living.
Social connection and the intimacy. So here, let me just read this Ted Berrigan sonnet. Time flies by like a great whale, and I find my hand grows stale at the throttle of my many-faceted and fake appearance who bucks and spouts by detour under the sheets. Hollow portals of solid appearance. Movies are poems, a holy Bible, the great mother to us. People go by in the fragrant day, accelerate softly my blood. But blood is still blood, and tall as a mountain blood. Behind me, green rubber grows, feet walk in wet water, and dusty heads grow wide. Padre, father, or fat old man, as you will, I am afraid to succeed. Afraid to fail. Tell me now, again, who I am. So maybe this would be an appropriate moment. I hate how fast time goes on the radio. This might be an appropriate moment for me to play this great occasion, which is much more recent, of Bernadette Mayer and Leanne Brown reading a poem they wrote together for a specific occasion, when Mayer was being sort of honored or colloquialed at, I believe, at University of Pennsylvania. So I'm just going to play that. And here we go.
We've had a lot of fun of switching off, trading off. Sometimes we read just to see what kind of resonances appear, and it's not planned, so we'll see what happens. But we have a collaboration that I proposed when I knew we were going to be reading here. We've never read it together, so it's the first time. So we did it by email. It's her first email collaboration.
So you have to start.
Okay.
Is that the title?
I want the title to be, yeah. You'll be okay. Hearing from me. That was very New York school sounding. You'll be hearing from me. I am the decider, my four-year-old and Bush said simultaneously, shouldn't we speak red table Japanese as long as the light lasts? We could imitate each other's Valentines.
I am the Coca-Cola, my young daughter and president, Thicket, said at once, didn't you talk vermilion armoire? Then when crepuscularness extended beyond our aping every driveway of the other of her phonemes, eh?
It's yam day, I'm cock of the walk. My wonderful present day sets sights on Poydras Street as you speak in magenta letters ready din, winning eventide's telescopic monkeying with the space-time continuum of our snow school dome.
On beat night, your lemur of the lane, your awe partial past night ogles onomatopoeia overlook as I tell in purple pandemonium's pointless hubbub, losing morning's binoculars to fooling with the quantum poetics of your dry, anarchic satellite dish.
It's B-E-E-T-S, not B-E-A-T-S. You're the Leaning Tower of Pizza. Ah, oh, palatial pastorals, nightbird ogres, ontological and oviform. Ital pluperfect palladium ointment hubbies make logomachy moorings by uncles too. Fueling wits by kumquat politics over Europe's diurnal Saturnalia discs.
It's diurnal.
Oh, yeah. Diurnal.
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 Oh. Yeah. Okay, now we're going to read it backwards, line by line. Yeah?
Okay.
No?
Sights on Poydras Street as it's Yam Day. I'm Cock of the Walk.
That was Gary Wright with his 1976 hit My Love is Alive. And in 1976, a lot of great things were happening in poetry. And we were going to talk about some of them, but I'm afraid if we do, we won't have a lot of time left to talk about some of the other awesome things. Well, and one of the things I wanted Tommy to relate is his first sighting of Bernadette Mayer.
Yeah, so just kind of as an example of like the way that the New York school and like how it was so private. I mean, they all wrote for each other, it seemed like. I looked at it today, even in her book Moving, Bernadette's mm-hmm. book Moving, like the copyright page even has like all its, whenever she's like thanking people and just like citing people and saying like who was involved and who contributed to the book, it's by first name only. You know, it's like, you know, thanks to Grace and Jonathan, mm-hmm. thanks to Ted. And it's just like, no one knows who these people are. So she's speaking to them.
We do now, which is
but
the
that's
interesting.
That's the right. weird thing. That so it's like, thing. It kind of opens itself up to this sort of cult worship almost. Not worship, but it's sort of like a cult thing. You know, it's like this kind of obscure movement that like
it's framed
a certain way.
Right, it's something that if you do know about it, you can feel like you're an initiate of something. So as a poet, you can, it adds a certain kind of, it's not insiderish in the sense of there are outsiders necessarily, right. But it's just like a drawing in.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it was a cool thing. When I was a freshman in college, I found this website that had all these facsimiles of like language school, New York school poets, like Ted Berrigan and Clark Coolidge and, you know, Tom Clark. And then also Bernadette Mayer. It had like all these like scans of all their works. And I read them and it felt like so like I was accessing this thing that was just so weird and obscure. But I felt like I was inside on it. And I became like really kind of obsessed with Bernadette Mayer. And I'm from New Orleans and I was a freshman in college and I was at this festival called Voodoo Fest. And I was going to see some band and I was by myself and I was like kind of walking out and I saw this woman like in a green army jacket with like a cane, this woman with like long gray hair and like walking next to a man. And it was like, and I saw her, and this is like halfway across the country from where, you know, Bernadette Mayer lives. But I knew that it was Bernadette Mayer, like, because what's weird is like, you know, I felt like I was so in on this scene, you know, I'd like seen pictures of Bernadette Mayer and stuff, and I felt like she was my friend, and I was like, oh my God, it's Bernadette Mayer. And I texted my friend who was like this poetry freak like me, and he was just like, dude, I saw Bernadette Mayer. And I don't know, he was just like, no way, how is it possible? But it's so weird because I felt like it was just, it was like fate or something like that.
So I'm going to read a really recent poem of Bernadette's. And then before, maybe to take us out, I'm going to start reading from this extensive and amazing list that exists online. If you Google Bernadette Mayer experiments, you will find this long list of writing experiments that she has given to her students over many, many years. And the list really demonstrates her approach to poetry, which also, I think, really explains the prolificness of a lot of the poets in her community. And it's not just prolificness for the sake of, like, output. It's about really allowing anything to happen in your poem and really not sort of privileging what I referred to in my notes as, like, the myth of individual genius. This is not about having a genius moment. This is about applying yourself to your words in your life. So anyway, here's her poem, All Aboard. Tumbled down an incline at Bash Bish. Broke many things. It was still spring. Clouded over. It was too rainy to walk annually at Bartholomew's Cobble. A coneflower appeared, as did a lupin, even some alyssum. Be forewarned. The eternal perennial is not immortal. Though rooted in the ground and coming back, it might disappear in a wildfire, tornado, or apocalypse, or move over in a spring flood or earthquake. You move over and you'll see the same thing you saw yesterday. Maybe it's the welcome wagon. Here's a cherry pie. The cherries are eternal. And here's, I'm just going to start reading from this list and we're going to disappear as I read. So here's some things you can do to write some poems. Write once a day in minute detail about one thing. Write every day at the same time, for example, lunch poems, waking ideas, etc. Write minimally, one line or sentence per day. Create a collaborative journal. Rewrite someone else's writing. Systematically derange the language. Write a work consisting only of prepositional phrases or add a gerund to every line of an already existing work. Eliminate material systematically from a piece of your own writing until it is, quote, ultimately reduced. Take an idea, anything that interests you, or an object, then spend a few days looking and noticing, perhaps making notes on what comes up about that idea. Write as you think, as close as you can come to this. That is, put pen to paper and don't stop. Experiment writing fast and writing slow. Attempt tape recorder work, that is, recording without a text, perhaps at specific times. Write, taking off from visual projections, whether mental or mechanical, without thought to the word in the ordinary sense, no craft. Experiment with writing in a group. Collaborative work, a group writing individually off of each other's work over a long period of time in the same room. Dream work, record dreams daily. Experiment with translation or transcription of dream thought.